Watchman's Torch Newsletter, Issue Number 1. Welcome to the Watchman's Torch Newsletter. Location, Karachi, Pakistan. Apartment paid for in cash. Dear privacy seekers, if you're not familiar with me, I'm Gabriel Custodiate. For those who do know me, nice to see you here. You're looking at the very first edition of the Watchman's Torch Newsletter. I've been meaning to start a premium newsletter for years. After 5 years of producing the Watchman Privacy Podcast, writing an intermittent free newsletter, and producing numerous privacy courses on Escape the Technocracy, I finally found the perfect medium to share my knowledge on an ongoing basis. I'm not going to bog you down with a lengthy introduction. You know why you're here. We're going to keep these issues as succinct as possible, within 10 pages in general. The signal-to-noise ratio of online information has never been worse. I get it. So, buckle up. Let's go. I'm done, for now, with independent Linux laptop companies. The masses scream, "I love Linux laptop companies." Okay, what exactly do you like about them? I've used a System 76 laptop for years now, and I've been in direct communication with users of Framework laptops. We're all disappointed. In principle, I like the idea behind these companies. They're not giant corporations, but smaller competitors who buy and assemble their computer components into their own machines. Okay, but so what? They're still corporations at this point, and most of them are politically woke, like all tech companies. More importantly, what exactly am I getting? The uncomfortable truth is, not much. My System 76 laptop had driver issues for the first year of use that disabled my microphone and caused total chaos with my trackpad. This severely crippled my productivity for at least a year after purchase. Was I using an unsupported Linux distribution? Yes, but it was a popular one, Linux Mint. Did I make the mistake of getting a just-released laptop that would take time to get driver updates from the Linux kernel? Probably. But still, it's inexcusable in my view that any of this happened. More importantly, I received almost no benefit in exchange for this hassle. My experience made me look past the shameless cheerleading to get to the raw truth. Companies like System 76 or Framework offer modest privacy improvements, if any, over mainstream laptops, sometimes feature serious problems, including failing to sleep when commanded, an existential threat if you put laptop into bag while still running, and like to market themselves with words like open and Linux-focused and right to repair to garner support from sympathetic customers. It is largely unwarranted. Let's look into the details. When I buy a System 76 Lemur Pro laptop, what am I getting? A $1,500 starting price laptop with reasonable specs. The processor is slightly outdated? Fine. I get 24 gigs of RAM at that price and I can easily upgrade? Great. What else though? Some people like to buy System 76 to avoid the Intel Management Engine, the theoretical spy chip that is surveying all your computer activity. I've never gotten to the bottom of how afraid we should be of this, by the way. Either way, while System 76 does still feature IME being disabled, not all of their computers have it disabled. Their AMD laptop, to my knowledge, has never had its IME equivalent disabled, and in fact, only around half of their products even have the open firmware that would allow IME to be disabled. It's also a bit unclear whether IME is disabled by default, or if the user has to take action themselves. Clearly, it's not a focus of System 76, and so I'm not exactly running to them for this feature. Other people like these laptops because they use Core Boot, a mostly open source alternative to proprietary BIOS. That's nice, but not even all their computers come with Core Boot, as I just mentioned. Right to repair and customization. This is what these companies are hanging their hats on these days. In fact, almost entirely. It's fine. But if I'm being honest, I can add RAM to a Lenovo ThinkPad, I can upgrade the SSD, I don't really want to make more upgrades than that. And by the time a decade has passed, the screen and keyboard are going to be outdated anyway, such that I'll put the old laptop to pasture, perhaps as a server or a media center, and buy another. The green shaming that these companies do makes me want to buy less with them and not more. So then what? Let's talk about the downsides to these companies. For one, they are quite costly. Quite. Then there are some small privacy consequences. I can't buy a Framework laptop at Best Buy, which means I can never buy it in cash or in a hurry. They might not accept my privacy-focused credit card and CMRA address one day, especially with the kinds of prices we're talking about, which are more sensitive to fraud detection. That's a serious concern. It also introduces potential supply chain attacks when I can't buy in person. Then there's another privacy problem. When I have a System 76 laptop on display at the airport, it signals that I'm a hacker type or potentially a privacy nut. Yes, I can cover it up, but it's certainly not helping me to have these logos. Incompatibility. I searched and searched for what was wrong with my laptop while using a popular Linux distribution. It turns out that laptops, unlike desktop PCs, have a different arrangement of necessary drivers that makes them more integrated overall. It means that under the right combination of nasty circumstances, you might be waiting for the Linux kernel to become aware of this obscure laptop and develop drivers for it. Frankly, that sucks, and it's the main reason I'm done with these devices. I want to be clear about something. I'm not a Bitcoin maxi or a Monero maxi or a Linux maxi. I don't really maxi. I use the tools that work. Am I risking never getting a sponsorship with these companies? You bet I am. Screw them. Unlike your other privacy influencers bought and paid for, I work for you and not any company. What's my next laptop purchase? Probably a Lenovo ThinkPad. I've heard good things about Lenovo X1 Carbons, though they are costly. Maybe some of the other laptops that advertise as being Linux compatible. Alas, cheap Acer laptops have never let me down. One thing I know for sure, it's not going to be an indie laptop company. Is the Terminator behind a Monero price spike? For those familiar with Watchman privacy, you already know that we're not in the habit of tracking the price of Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency. Our focus has always been on privacy, not profits. That said, there are rare occasions when cryptocurrency price movements intersect with cybersecurity topics in a meaningful way. Today is one of those moments, and it seems fitting to this discussion. Those of you who follow cryptocurrency markets may have noticed a remarkable 50% surge in the price of Monero in late April. The event coincided with a Bitcoin hack involving the transfer of 3,520 Bitcoin, valued at around $340 million at the time of this article. For the inquisitive among us, the funds can currently be tracked at this Bitcoin address: BC1QCRYPCHNRDX87JNAL5E5M849F W460T4GK7VZ55G. What followed was a rapid and calculated maneuver, as the stolen Bitcoin was laundered through multiple exchanges and ultimately swapped for Monero, the well-known privacy cryptocurrency. Here's where things get interesting. Due to its focus on privacy, Monero has faced widespread delisting from mainstream exchanges, creating a highly unusual scenario. The cryptocurrency's limited availability on centralized exchanges means that these platforms typically maintain very low reserves of it. Reportedly, one of the few exchanges that still lists Monero saw its reserves completely drained in under 2 hours. On top of that, many of the exchanges where Monero remains available are instant swap services, which inherently require users to take custody of their coins. This limitation makes it exceedingly difficult to create paper Monero, fake or non-existent Monero on exchanges. As a result, exchanges were left scrambling to purchase real Monero to meet demand, further driving prices upward. This sudden market imbalance was only exacerbated by users frantically searching for ways to access Monero as an on-ramp or off-ramp amidst the chaos. The situation is reminiscent of Bitcoin's early days, where price action would catch the attention of mainstream media, sending new waves of investors searching for ways to enter this uncharted market. But the story doesn't stop there. Let's peel back another layer to see what lies beneath. Anyone looking into Monero's recent price surge would have encountered a flood of eye-catching headlines. However, upon closer inspection, many of these articles were low-effort pieces, likely churned out by artificial intelligence. Nestled within the clutter was a perplexing claim about an apparent Monero upgrade called EP159. According to these sources, this mysterious update supposedly introduced compliance features to the privacy-focused cryptocurrency and was touted as a key driver behind the surge in price. Original graphics are available on the text version of this newsletter. Yet, something doesn't quite add up. For those familiar with Monero's development process, this claim immediately rings alarm bells. The so-called EP159, along with its supposed sibling EP160, is non-existent within Monero's ecosystem. The buzz surrounding these upgrades appears to have been nothing more than junk content, likely generated by AI, to misdirect or manipulate the narrative. Original graphics available on the text version of the newsletter. To some, this discrepancy might seem like a dead end, easy to dismiss as noise. But for me, it was only the beginning of my investigation. Armed with basic OSINT, open source intelligence tools, I began piecing together the puzzle, mapping out the network of articles, tracking references, and documenting the chain of links tied to these claims. Soon, a distinctive pattern emerged. The press surrounding Monero's price surge fell into two categories. On one hand were core articles that subtly linked to a particular social media account, more on that later, and on the other were secondary articles almost certainly AI-driven that recycled content in increasingly garbled forms. These secondary pieces frequently included fabricated claims or outright hallucinations, yet they adhere to the same general structure. Price action report leads to hack, leads to technical analysis nonsense, leads to EP159. It doesn't take much detective work to see who stands to benefit. The spotlight inevitably shines on the mysterious social media account tied to this operation. This account exhibits a suspiciously predictable pattern, tweeting about recent Monero developments, exploiting trending topics, and redirecting attention to their own token. Digging deeper, their posts reveal another red flag: inflated engagement metrics marked by high like and reshare activity but conspicuously low comment interaction. This imbalance strongly suggests the account is buying likes or using other shady tactics to boost visibility. Despite these artificial boosts, its follower count remains conspicuously low, an odd anomaly for accounts engaged in such promotional strategies. Original image, which is highly recommended to view, is on the text version of this newsletter. And so the investigation comes to an end. While these findings may seem like just another cautionary tale, they illustrate a deeper issue at play in the world of digital information: the dangerous consequences of relying on free, unverified content in an age increasingly dominated by AI generation and manipulative narratives. This flood of AI-crafted articles might seem harmless at first glance, an abundance of accessible information for the average reader. Yet, it's anything but. These low-effort pieces not only oversimplify and distort complex topics, but actively manipulate perceptions, sow confusion, and lend ill-deserved credibility to fabricated claims. As seen in this case, the false narrative around EP159 didn't just waste everyone's time. It had the potential to mislead investors, spur ill-informed debates, and inflate price speculation. Worse, it could enable deliberate pump-and-dump schemes that exploit the naive or unprepared. People often imagine that if AI ever becomes a threat, it'll look like something out of Terminator: metallic skeletons, glowing red eyes, and the end of civilization as we know it. But that's not where the real fight is happening. Not yet, anyway. The reality is quieter, subtler, and already unfolding all around us. It's not machine guns. It's machine-written articles. It's not killer robots. It's viral misinformation, fake press releases, and algorithm-driven narratives designed to manipulate markets, shape sentiment, and waste your time. And while these systems might not look menacing, they're eroding our ability to tell truth from fiction, signal from noise. This is the real battlefield. It's not some future sci-fi dystopia. It's right here, right now. This is man versus machine. 15 privacy things you didn't think of. Number 1, your email subject lines, even on Proton Mail, are not encrypted. Don't reveal anything in subject lines. Get into the habit. Number 2, your Uber shouldn't know where you actually live. Walk down the road before starting it up and activating it. This also applies where you are dropped off. Number 3, unless you're surviving on a privacy-focused phone like Graphene OS, it's listening. Put it in the fridge during a serious conversation with someone and don't compromise on this. Number 4, even with a regular Android phone, you don't need to sign in with Google. The only restriction is that you can't use the Google Play Store. In that case, download FDroid and then install Aurora. Now you can download all Google Play apps. Do this for normies in your life. At the checkout till of a shop or anywhere, you don't need to stare into the camera or stand in front of it. This includes ATMs and fast food places, which increasingly have cameras. Block your face, step to the side, whatever you have to do. Number 6, $100 bills and equivalent in other countries are often considered suspicious. Use them at automated checkouts to break the bill down and create less suspicion. Number 7, dentists are used to being paid in cash. Assuming it's legal in your country, pay in cash and don't give out any personal information. Number 8, looking to send a one-off email with a temporary account? Try a disposable mail service like Yotmail, Email on Deck, or a mail alias like Simple Login. Number 9, you might get denied accounts or shopping orders based on the overall suspicion of your setup. Things that make you more trustworthy? Chrome browser, mobile phone or Windows Mac, not using a virtual machine, no VPN or VPN closer to the billing shipping address, smaller purchase amount, custom domain email address with history instead of Proton or burner email. Number 10, in most countries, your signature can be indecipherable scribbles. Consider this. Number 11, you can learn a lot of privacy strategies by talking to homeless people. Number 12, I've noticed that sometimes internet service providers don't request too personal of information if you sign up for service as a business entity. Number 13, public library Wi-Fi is some of the most accepting, non-suspicious Wi-Fi on the planet. Number 14, the phone number 720-865-8500 is a public reading service and can get you past requirements of phone number, including things like grocery store rewards. Number 15, social engineering is the key to getting things without giving personal information. Practice as often as you can and get comfortable talking to people, asking them favors, and seeing what makes them operate. Try this every chance you get. Setting the foundations of vehicle privacy. We often forget about vehicle privacy, and much to our detriment. Vehicle privacy covers a number of topics. It covers who knows about the ownership of our vehicle from observing our license plate. It covers how it reveals us as the owner around town. It involves what we have inside our vehicle should it be searched or burgled. And it covers the recent terrifying trend of vehicle computerization, which is soaking up our phone data, our faces, and our voice. Let's start with the easy stuff, shall we? The appearance of your vehicle is the easiest thing for someone tracking you down to find. We're not even talking automated license plate readers, ALPRs, or anything like this at this point. We're simply talking the appearance of your vehicle. My sister-in-law owns a very distinct vehicle in a very distinct color. In a small town, it is known whenever she is on the road. Headed out of town in your bright red Tesla? Well, good to know. We might want to rob your house tonight. If you're trying to live under the radar, it's important to select a vehicle that blends in. The simple solution is you find the most popular model of car and car color in your area or in your country. If you choose a luxury vehicle, you might be followed and burgled later. Stay on the cheaper side and remember, you can always improve the vehicle under the hood. Now let's talk about what's on your vehicle. Do you have custom lights that stand out? Bumper stickers, weird window tinting, a Hawaiian dancer on your dashboard? These identify you just like your small actions and plugins identify your browser fingerprint when you use a web browser. My privacy philosophy has always been stick to vanilla, stick to default. Don't soup up your vehicle, at least on the outside. You can always improve the performance under the hood and get a serious beast without touching the external, visible part of your vehicle. Bumper stickers are a serious no-go. Not only will this identify you, but depending on your politics, in today's climate, could get your vehicle keyed or worse. There's no reason for stickers on your car, your phone, or your laptop. It can only harm you. Save your personality for your actual personality, if you have one. And to remove bumper stickers, your best tools are a heat gun, Goo Gone, or WD-40, and a razor blade. Be careful. Many YouTube videos can guide you. Don't forget to cover up your VIN number that is publicly displayed in multiple locations, near your front windshield, on your door jamb, etc., with Gorilla tape. Alright, next level. Your vehicle is also revealed by the brand decals on it. Ford, Hyundai, Toyota, etc. You can remove these. The best way I've found is to use that heat gun again. Hair dryer might work, in combination with dental floss. There's a video that I've linked in the text. And God forbid you have your dealership emblem on your vehicle, or on the license plate frame? What are you thinking? Get that off today. By removing your decal, you are causing confusion to anyone who wants to say, it was a Toyota. It's also possible to cause a bit of confusion to automated license plate readers, which collect this information along with your license plate. Why not? And if you wanted to go next level again, you could buy decals of another vehicle brand and put those on yours. So you take off your Toyota decal and put on a Lexus, for example. You can find these on Amazon, and you'll want to pay attention to the size. Walk around a car park to get an idea of what other car brand decals might work for yours. By the way, I don't have a clear enough sense about the legality of swapping emblems. I don't imagine anything wrong with it, but please make sure to validate that before proceeding. The only problem, potentially, is if you get pulled over and your vehicle registration says a Hyundai Elantra, but you have a Volkswagen emblem. Of course, most people when asked questions by the police say something to the effect of, I'm not trying to be rude, but I've always been instructed not to answer questions when I'm pulled over. I'm going to reserve my right to remain silent. Hope you understand. I don't have enough field data on this, so if you do, please report back to me. Oh, and by the way, nothing in this newsletter is legal or financial or any other kind of advice. On the topic of tinting, this is something you should consider. If you live in a hot climate, it can save you by blocking light. But it can also make it more difficult for people to look into your vehicle. There is a limit, of course. Every region, including state by state in the US, has limitations on how dark a window can be tinted. Almost no one allows you to tint your front windshield. And remember, even if you are under the limit, if a police wants to stop you to check it, then this is nearly as bad. You don't want any interactions with the police. I would encourage you to research the local limit in your area, go to a local tint shop to ask about it, and get their input on this entire question. And then potentially get the windows tinted to agree that is reasonably below the legal limit, as in, give yourself some room to spare. If you're feeling more risky and going for very dark, you're probably not the only person who recognizes that plenty of people drive around with windows clearly darker than legal, and mostly they are not bothered. If pulled over, consider immediately rolling down all of your windows fully so no tint is showing. If you spend time in your vehicle parked, especially at night, you need to get window blockers. The best video I found on the topic is here. Link in the original text document. This prevents people from seeing your phone and other devices from within your car, and really seeing anything about you while you're parked. You can certainly also do this even if you aren't living inside your vehicle. On that topic, be selective about where you park. Toward the front row, or maybe closer to the middle, of 24-hour stores, for example, is ironically a good place not to get anyone's attention. Oh, by the way, we're about to get into some more nasty digital surveillance tools. Just a reminder that small towns are less likely to have all these cameras and tracking. Definitely consider spending your time in smaller towns rather than cities. We have a cutoff of around 400,000 metro population. Anything more than that, and you start to get to the nasty stuff. Okay, now let's elevate our game. Automated license plate readers. Unfortunately, these are everywhere and we do not have the ability to track them all. The website dflock.me, which is crowdsourced ALPR reporting, is exactly that, crowdsourced and not definitive. It fails to capture many of the devices out there. The sad reality is that ALPRs can be attached to tow trucks, police cars, and other moving vehicles, making it very difficult to plan for. Furthermore, any camera in an area can capture a license plate that can later be analyzed. Sometimes you'll see in the news that ALPR has found this car in the area. There might not be any ALPRs involved in the area, just a camera that captures a license plate that is later identified using ALPR technology. This is a constantly changing landscape. By the way, check out the EFF website, atlasofsurveillance.org, for the police technology in your area. Still, it's worth planning your routes using DFLOC to avoid these cameras. Spend some time studying DFLOC. Avoid shops with ALPRs in their parking lot. Some companies are paid by ALPR companies to do this to get better data about their customers. Avoid routes that use ALPRs. If it's an essential route, you could always pull over, take off your license plate, and put the license plate back on once you pass it. I'm talking about smaller routes, obviously. Every time you take off the license plate, you do incur some risk. If ever pulled over, of course, you just forgot to put it back on after going through the car wash or something like this. And if your homeowners association or neighborhood has any entry cameras, complain very loudly while taking off the license plate as you enter. Let's be clear about something. You may have seen these videos about reflective stickers that can repel toll cameras and the like. You may have seen license plate flippers, James Bond style, or strategies of covering up particular parts of the plate with a leaf. Tampering with a license plate is not only illegal, but I'm aware that it is a felony in some states. It's much safer to reroute yourself to avoid these kind of cameras. Also, if you're home or entering a car wash or something like this, you could use magnetic plates, link in the original newsletter description, and remove them. I had a friend share with me a receipt of him going through a car wash. Because he used his credit card, it said, "Thank you, Mr. Osmond Clark," and also had his license plate spelled out right there. That's nasty. Same goes for mechanic. Take license plate off before handing them your keys to do the work. If they need your plate or your VIN, tell them you are concerned about data privacy and are happy to give them your make and model number and your submodel number, which can usually serve as a substitute for looking up vehicle parts, which is really what they want this data for. Magnetic license plates. Make sure to test them thoroughly. Every few months, take it off, take it inside, and make sure the screws are tightened and everything is in good shape. If you need to buy a new pair, do it. You do not want these things falling off while you're driving during rush hour. Be careful slamming your trunk or boot so it doesn't fall off. In general, back into any parking space you go in to avoid surveillance. Otherwise, you can take off the plates and put them face down in your front seat. This should be mostly reserved for at home in your driveway. Just note that parking in some public spots, which includes in front of your house on the road, in many cases requires you to have your plates on. You know what? Screw all of this vehicle surveillance. Make use of taxis and rideshare apps when you can. You can use a friend's Uber or a family member's to avoid KYCing yourself. Borrow someone else's car. Get back to biking and walking. It's getting crazy out there. I know some people who rarely leave their homestead and only do their import-export missions back to the servile society once every other month. I'm starting to get on board with that. Okay, but let's take a breath and continue. Private ownership of a vehicle. This is beyond the scope of this tutorial, too many caveats, but you should absolutely start this journey, which we may finish later. You can title a vehicle in an LLC or a trust. If you reveal your name in the LLC signup, or as the trustee of the trust, or if your name shows up on the registration, you're basically burned. You may as well not have an LLC or trust. Your best bet is to call your DMV in your state and ask them how this would work. Ask them what is required for you to give if you register a vehicle to an LLC. Ask them if it will incur any tax obligations. Then call back the next day, talk to a different person, and get their opinion. Start working towards this as you also learn about LLCs and privacy trusts. Oh, by the way, don't leave anything in your vehicle. This is just tempting thieves to break in. I had it happen to me a few years ago. I hope they like napkins. I don't have my vehicle registration in there. It goes into my wallet instead. I didn't have any identifying documents of any kind. I didn't have anything of value whatsoever. Nothing was stored in that vehicle. Why would I? And I never store anything even short-term in there. For example, an Amazon box with a label showing my name and address on it. Be wise about vehicles because they are public-facing pieces of property. Keep them empty. Final topic, computerization of cars. It's disgusting. It's invasive. I have 2 episodes on this on my privacy podcast. Definitely watch them. Your only clear hope is to buy and nurture an older vehicle, let's say before 2014, ideally earlier. Get it fixed up to your liking. If you have a newer vehicle, don't connect your devices to it, whether Bluetooth or USB. Charge your phone with your battery bank. Be careful having sensitive conversations in the vehicle, as it might have microphones you can't see. You can type your VIN into the website vehicleprivacyreport.com. I know, it seems invasive, but check out my interviews for why this is necessary. I'm okay with doing this. And see what surveillance features your vehicle has. For now, folks, be aware of this and do what you can. Quotation of the month. Metamorphosis is difficult. I imagine the exquisite agony of the caterpillar turning itself into a butterfly, pushing out eye stalks, pounding its fat cells into iridescent wing dust, at last cracking the mother-of-pearl sheath and staggering upright on sticky, hair's breadth legs, drunken, gasping, dazed by the light. John Banville, The Untouchable. Book recommendation: How to Be Invisible by J.J. Luna. The late J.J. Luna was a juggernaut in the privacy advice world. I recall Michael Bazell even recognized him as the godfather. Luna cut his teeth on privacy in Franco's totalitarian Spain, so privacy was always a matter of life and death for him. I always appreciated this seriousness. There was no room for error, and his guide is hardcore, full of thousands of details that are worth picking up. None of it is digital. God bless him for that. And requiescat in pace, J.J. Luna. Here's a favorite line from the book. I also confess to withholding information in other ways. If I run a small business out of my home, I neglect to get a business license. If I move, I neglect to inform the postal authorities. If asked for information when obtaining an email address, I fail to list my true name and home address.